Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Lori Levy. Lori and her partner, Rita Jacinto, own Flying Blue Dog, which I think a lot of people are pretty familiar with. You've got a cute little blue kind of mythical beast on your labels for your plants, yeah. And people have known you through the years. But I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the animals you raise, because not only do you raise some interesting animals, but you also do some interesting things with the meat from them. So let's talk first of all about what animals you have up there at Flying Blue Dog.
We have laying chickens. We have laying dual-purpose and meat ducks. We have milking goats, meat rabbits. And every couple of years, we raise a couple of pigs.
And quail.
Don't
forget the quail.
I forgot the quail. Boy, am I in trouble when I get home. And Kutrinik's quail. Yeah, they're not the native quail. I get asked that a lot.
People
ask if I'm going out in the brush and beating around looking for eggs. Seriously, I get asked that. The Kutrinik's quail are from Asia. They've been domesticated for centuries. They're called Old World quail. They've been around for so long, and that's what we raise. Quail is the state bird of California. Fish and Game is very, very serious about protecting quail. And you're not allowed to keep our native quail in captivity or go grab their eggs out of the brush or anything. That's all not okay. So we raise the Asian quail.
Now, some of these things that you raise for market, but some things you raise just for your own personal use.
Yeah.
And why is that?
I will take anything to market I'm allowed to take to market. I am not allowed to take dairy to market, even though we have 5 milking goats, because I'm not doing anything in a certified kitchen with milk. And that's heavily regulated with lots of states' inspections. And, you know, they don't mess around with milk in California. Well, Humboldt County, anyway, I should say, not California. And then there's also, I have goat meat and I have pork. But in order to take that to market, I would have to take the animals to a USDA processor, like down in Ferndale or Redwood Meats in Eureka. And Rita and I are just not willing to do the travel stress with animals to take them to a processor to make it legal to sell the meat. We're just not willing to do it. You know, all our animals, short of the pigs, are born on the farm. We have all their parent stock. Some of them we bottle feed from the day that they're born with the intention that they will be butchered eventually. We can't keep all the animals that are born on the farm. It's just not even physically possible. But we consider ourselves first and foremost stewards of plants, dirt, animals, anything in our care. That's our very first primary obligation, is to be a good steward. And to be a good steward to these animals involves being willing to process them on the farm, even though I can't sell the meat, so that the day that they die, they go out quick, they go out happy, they go out pain-free, they haven't had the stress of being taken someplace else and wait around, it's left along. They have to wait around before they're processed through a USDA-approved means. So that's what we do.
And then I wanted to talk about one of the animals in particular that you raise, and that is rabbits, because it's kind of funny, because growing up, I remember my grandmother talking about eating rabbits. She just didn't want to see another rabbit, because growing up, that was all they ate, because it was like one of the few sources of protein that they could afford.
Yeah.
And so it seems like there was a time when rabbit was just really readily consumed by people in the U.S.
It was, and that was around World War II, maybe even. Yeah. Yeah, backyard rabbit raising, that was an easy source of protein for people when you couldn't go to the grocery store and buy a lot of food, a lot of meat anyway. Rabbits can be raised solely on backyard greens, weeds, kitchen scraps. They reproduce. They raise their own babies. There's not too much there except, you know, you offer a little more food. You know, now when you're raising meat rabbits, and people are buying store-bought pellets for them, they've got a monetary investment. So now it's, you know, you want to butcher them by this age, so you're not continuously feeding them. Uh-huh. But back then, They could take their time. They could grow slower on a natural diet. You basically, when you needed food that night, you went and you grabbed a rabbit and you had it in the oven within a half hour of butchering it. And that was dinner. And that was normal.
So when you're feeding your rabbits, do you feed them some pellets or do you try to get a lot of the greens from your farm?
The diet, my rabbits have a diet that is like, I would say 90% natural food that I either grow for them or forage for them. And this is part of my whole, you know, when I say we peck away at things, the wild blackberries used to be the bane of my existence. Every summer I was spending time, they were taking down fences, they were overgrowing the orchard. I was out there hacking them, you know, screaming at them, cussing at them, it's a stupid job. And on summer and I'm, you know, I've got long everything on and gloves and I'm dying in the heat and hacking away at these blackberries. Now I look at them and go, wow, look at all that rabbit food.
Ah.
And so I'm out there in the early morning hours or the late evening and I'm cutting on them before they get long and horrific and feed them to the rabbits that eat every part, including the thorn.
No way.
You'd think the inside of their mouth was some kind of flesh-colored titanium
That's
to watch
amazing.
Them eat these things. The goats do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
But now I look at the blackberries as perfect summer food for rabbits. And so, no, I don't have to buy the pellets. And I also grow a wheat fodder for them that I feed to them every day. And every bit of weeding that goes on in every row, it goes to some animal, whether it's the rabbits or the chickens or the ducks or the goats. I mean, we run all our what used to be compost, through animals now.
Uh-huh.
It's all food.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you do some interesting things with your rabbits. First of all, I'm kind of like wondering, how did you first figure out how to even butcher them? Because I know you're really careful with wanting to make sure that they have a very quick, clean death. But how did you figure that out?
YouTube videos back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah, I watched, I don't know, as many as I could. I read as many books as I could. But really, it was helpful to watch YouTube videos back in the day. And there was one guy whose name I can't even remember. I really liked how he was dispatching them. And I thought, that's the way to do it. His rabbits, they were on the ground. They were eating, you know, the dandelions that were on the ground. He was behind them with a very long barrel. It might have been a pellet rifle. I can't remember. They never saw it coming. It was a headshot. They were chowing down, feeling good. And I thought,
yeah,
this is the guy. I like what he's doing.
Yeah, I like that idea too.
Yeah. So that was how we learned initially. We've since... It's been a lot of years that I've been doing this, and I've since revised the process over and over again that suits our setup, our life, our rabbits, and it's actually not a difficult thing, and we do it with all the animals. It's not a difficult thing to make sure that they're feeling really, really good, really happy, chowing down on their absolute favorite food with a very well-placed shot that is an instant kill.
Yeah, and you actually now have written a book so that you can help other people figure this out without having to go through the pain of 9,000 YouTube videos.
So I did. I wrote a book that is the book I wish I could have bought when I was learning. And it's an ebook. It's not available in paper. Ebook, you can buy it on Amazon, download it onto whatever device. And it's got 100 HD photos of the process. And part of the process for me was reading description. You know, so wrap's done, now you skin it, now you gut it. And I can remember opening a rabbit up, looking at it, going, I don't even know what all those things are in there.
Really? Yeah. Thank you so much, Lori, for coming in. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Lori Levy from Flying Blue Dog. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.